before we touch upon the issue of communication, just a few words about the retreat and Shurubindo's yoga, and then taking on to this aspect of the yoga. I somehow feel that these retreats are more like the nature of what is called in India as yagna. They are not for platforms for intellectual deliberations on abstruse subjects, because yoga is not a thing of the mind as much as it is a thing of the heart and the soul and the whole being. We may understand everything about yoga, about God, know everything that has been written in every book about the eternal, and yet we may be very, very, very far from. So the purpose these meetings serve is that we come together, we share the fire of aspiration, strengthen it in a collective force field which is full of invocation towards that light, that grace, that sweetness, that bliss, that peace, which is the source of all things. Second, when we talk about integral yoga, there is often a misconception that there are very few methods or practices. In fact, many people carry this impression that there are no methods given in integral yoga. This misconception comes from two main sources. One, having not read Shurubindo and the Mother. This is the first, very first thing. Because when we read Mother and Shurubindo, we see so many methods and practices that sometimes one wonders whether a lifetime is enough even to practice one drop or one sentence of what they have said. Simple thing, let's say, a very short sentence of the Mother, or half a sentence. No words, acts. It's a practice. It's an invitation. No words, acts. Talking of speech, he says, speak as little as possible. It's a paradox that I have to speak on communication. So many such writings are full of such practices. And second reason why we think that there are no methods, because the moment we think of method, our mind instinctively turns towards something very external, very gross, very visible, like sitting cross-legged with spine bamboo straight, head lifted 2.5 feet above the ground. Breathing, posture, all the things that are external. It's actually a sign when we look for such methods and practice, a sign that we as a human race are still too gross, too crude, that we cannot understand that a whole lot of practices in life as well as in yoga are subtle, psychological. They are not so much visible. Yoga is not something which is lived only during hours when we sit cross-legged in this asana or that asana. But it is something that goes through the very fabric of our life. Depending upon the choices we make, depending upon the attitudes we adopt, depending upon the goals we set in front of ourselves, we either open the path of yoga or we block it. Depending upon the choices, we subject ourselves, as the Mother puts it, to one kind of determinisms or another. And these choices, who makes these choices? It's not something visible. Sitting in meditation for years and years, Ravana had made his choice. And that choice led to a very strange result of his meditation. Instead of losing the head symbolizing the ego and the mental, limited mental consciousness, he grew 10 heads. Gigantic ego. subtle, psychological, unseen. We are the ones who bring this out. We may do everything right outwardly, and yet our hearts are not yearning with the love for God. There is no thirst inside. Then nothing really happens. But one moment of genuine yearning, and a door opens, and we are flooded with the light and a stillness from beyond, much beyond our comprehension. And when that happens, then we laugh. We laugh because all that we believed yoga to be, what comes is something much, much more wonderful. No words can describe it. So that's the beauty of yoga, that it's really a wonder because mental consciousness has not tasted it. And the only way to understand what a gulab jamun tastes like is to eat it. They may describe it. It's dark in color, it's round, it's served in a bowl. Everything is fine. We can procure it from there. It costs so much. Gulab jamun, by the way, is the sweet that we just had. But we know nothing about it. We need to taste it. When we taste it, we don't speak about it. We simply say, I want another. That's what happens when people begin to grow in yoga. They crave for God. They want more and more of it. It's so, so tasty. That consciousness tastes so much different from all that we are accustomed to. We are accustomed to bitterness, anger, hatred, jealousies, ambitions, fears, lusts of all kinds, agitation. And we give expression to all these things in our life. But once we taste that consciousness, then the best one wants is to remain silent. And all that one feels like telling is, please taste it. Don't ask me about it. And yet we have to speak about it. It's not easy to speak about these things because they are subtle things. When we speak about communication, it's a paradox. Paradox because I think never before in the history of mankind there have been so many means of communication as in today's times. And perhaps never before in the history of mankind we have been so far apart from each other. We sit together with not one but two cell phones sometimes, each one with two chips. And we sit together and eat food, but each one is texting and messaging and receiving messages. And even if not, they are not there. There is a distance created between the hearts. And I have a feeling that these many means of communication that we have multiplied are simply a means to recreate that unity which we have lost. We have lost it because we entered into a mental curve of evolution. And what does the mind do? It divides. Mind divides, comparison, contrast. Each of us lives in our own worlds created by our minds. We don't even realize it, that each of us has a world of our own. And so when two people communicate, why misunderstandings arise? Because there are two different worlds which are being communicated. They don't understand each other because we have a mental atmosphere. And why we don't understand each other? Because every word that enters into our zone of hearing comes filtered through a whole layer. Sometimes the layers are very thick and dense. Nothing comes through. Nothing goes through. That's why very often, you know, we have this common thing in communication problems. You said this. No, but I didn't say this. It's a very common experience. We have heard something, but it's never been said. Why did we hear it? Because we are our own filters. So many filters. Yoga shows us so many filters, masks we wear. And we are born with it. Certain masks are given to us as birth, gift. take a body and take these masks free. For instance, if you are born in a certain culture, in a religion, in a certain racial milieu, we spontaneously wear those masks through which we see people. It's almost spontaneous, instinctively. And sometimes these masks can go very far. In India, for instance, it's customary to regard any person who is wearing a saffron cloth as a holy man, unless there is a media expose about him. It's a sad thing. We get so far away from truth when we see everything with a mask. And these masks get strengthened as we go through the whole process of so-called education. And we have mindsets. And in relationships, it can be such a big problem. Very soon, people form a mindset impatiently. Instead of understanding, within the first day, second day, mindsets are formed. So many times people come and tell me, you know, very first day I knew what the person is like. You have to be a yogi. Even a yogi can't know this. And now, rest of the time, everything is getting filtered. Take for instance, one assumes a mindset, oh, so and so, he's manipulative. Now, even when the person is well-meaning, genuine, you take it, there must be something, you know, he must be manipulating. Why? Because I have a mindset. But people who are paranoid, anything you may say, they suspect. Because there is a mindset. There is a filter. Some filters are good. So they hear only beautiful things. That is also not the true communication. Some filters are very dark. So whatever people say, we end up hearing only dark things. That's why if we want to cleanse this mud in the world, we need to only take a bath for ourselves. Cleanse our eyes. Mud is not outside. It is inside us. And we see in others what we carry deeply inside ourselves. We project onto people our being and we get that back. So many things. Communication is meant as a bridge, like at a level of the vital desire is meant to be a bridge to once again in ignorance recreate the unity we have lost. So communication serves two purposes. One is to create a bridge, and second is as an instrument of expression. It's part of the externalizing mind. But very often we use this to destroy whatever bridges are there. Two people are wonderfully fine till they start speaking. The moment they start speaking with human beings. So it's unfortunate that, you know, this instrument which has been given to us, very high instrument, is a new instrument. In Sri Aurobindo's yoga, we have this double movement. It's not enough that we go into the depths of our soul and come in touch with our inner being and say, Shivoham, Shivoham, Satchidanandam. It's not enough. It's only one radiant step. But as Savitri tells us here, to fulfill himself as God's desire. So we have to work upon our instrument being also. Our mind must have to grow wide and supple. Every discussion is an opportunity to grow wide and supple. Our hearts have to grow wide and supple and full of the nectar of sweetness, of love, of harmony, of beatitude. Our vital also has to become strong. It's no point calling God's power Ya Devi Sarva Bhuteshu Shakti Rupen Samsata. We heard that beautiful invocation. But when the Shakti comes, our being trembles. Because the vital is not quiet. It is very, very restless and agitated. So when it comes, it breaks. There are people who have broken down by the descent of the divine force. The instance is in the ashram context. Classical case is somebody who wanted to throw the javelin and invoke the mother's force. His javelin record is still late unbroken. It went so far, but in the process he broke his head. Not by the javelin, but by the force he pulled to throw the javelin. Lost his head. So yoga is not, as it is said, a thing for the weak. It's not something to be taken lightly. Many practices of yoga are simply so that we strengthen our being. For instance, many people get very tired at the end of the day. And they wonder, why do I get tired? And you know, good physicians tell them, don't worry, it happens to everyone. But greedy physicians often tell them that, look, you need to get through a whole test why you are tired, from thyroid to everything. But I ask a very simple question, and somebody says towards the evening, I'm very tired. So I ask him, how much do you talk? Really, speaking is one means through which we throw out and waste our energy. This body can be seen as an instrument which receives energy and throws out energy. There are channels by which we receive energy. For instance, we hear through the senses, we receive energy, the five senses. And the quality of the energy can be very nice, so it will increase the instrument of personality, or it can be of a very dark kind. Certain music uplifts us. Certain sounds uplift us. Certain voices suddenly open a door inside us. And certain other sounds, certain other music, certain other voices, they completely as if limit us, restrict us, make us feel dull, depressed. I had a professor in psychiatry. And whenever we had a case of mania is a state in which people feel very hyper. Their vital is on the high. And, you know, it's difficult to contain it with medication. It takes minimum 2 weeks. But our professor was famous for this act. God pardon me for speaking about him. Nice man. But he could turn a manic into depression within one single sitting. He had the art of it. Unwittingly. He'll ask him such questions and throw so much vital on him that the fellow within, by the time he comes out, he is totally down the other extreme. Speech has a power. Shubhuna says it's a creative power. It can create. It can destroy. It's a tremendous instrument which has been given to us. Similarly with sight. All the sights we receive can build our inner life. It can ruin our inner life. Everything, in fact, all these senses through which we receive and through which we transmit. This is a wonderful instrument. And this instrument has to be developed. This is one instrument. There are other instruments also, but this is one instrument which can connect the higher and the lower. This is how the Vedic rishis looked upon speech. They saw in speech 4 layers. 2 layers were not expressed in normal speech. Human instrument is not ready to express those things. The Paravak and the Pashyanti Vak. Because the Paravak has a total vision and speech is always successive. It cannot express. The moment it tries to express, it pulls down things. And the Pashyanti Vak, the seeing word, the seeing intelligence, at 2 levels which our normal ordinary speech expresses, the Madhyama and the Vyakri, which is crude. But this instrument has to be upgraded, and it can be upgraded. And to upgrade it, it's not just a training of the vocal cords, but training of the heart muscles, opening to something higher. There are a number of things. The whole world, just working on one single instrument, can be a lifetime sadhana. With regard to speech and with regard to many things in life, I have seen there are 6 questions. If we ask, we'll find most of the answers. It applies in science, it applies in medicine, it applies in many fields. Speech is no exception to that. 6, friendly gentlemen who help us in discovering things. And the names of these 6 friendly gentlemen are who, what, when, where, why, how. Who speaks? We don't even pause and think. When we are speaking, we can speak from different voices. There are different planes, different parts in us. When we are into an animated discussion, the vital is in front, speaking. And when the vital speaks, it's not speech but a hammer. We don't realize that our vital is rushing out whole energy becomes restless, turbulent, and we either come back from there having a headache or giving others a headache, or probably both, tired, exhausted, and as if that is not over, our machine gun has more bullets. So then after moving away, we further keep on moving, discussing, look at this person, look at that. Vital is like that. Who is speaking? The vital is speaking. When the mind speaks, it's different. How about the soul speaking? The mother tells us that before you speak, such a nice sutra, before you speak, step back, pause for a while and see whether your speech is going to help or hinder in the goal you have chosen. There are words, there are sounds, there are speeches that help us and help this world in its growth. Simple example, everyday life. Something called a self-fulfilling prophecy. We keep criticizing people. And at the end of the day, they keep justifying our criticism. We don't even realize that we have fed whatever was real or unreal defect in you. So we're going to say there's no use dwelling upon the real or unreal defect of others. Many things we see as defect with regard to our ego's reference point may not be a defect at all. For instance, a child who tells his parents, "Dad, you're wrong." So we may think it's a defect. From another standpoint, it's truthfulness, straightforwardness, frankness. So many things we think is defect is not necessarily a defect. So, but when we dwell upon these defects, we don't help. We hinder. We often talk about doing God's work, doing mother's work. But what do? When we constantly bring out the negative side of people, everybody is a shadow. So who speaks? Very important to see that. Does our ego speak? Because when the ego speaks, everything is going to be destroyed. Or something else which speaks. Something deep. Something which is always turned towards the light. Which wants the world to progress, ourselves to progress, not to pull down people. And these things are so subtle. So subtle. All of us feel, yes, others do it, not us. Mother goes to what extent? In the ashram. Sometimes when she would give interviews to people, you know, outside people like anywhere else, they are gossiping, it's the same stuff. And they are talking about that person, this person, that person, that person. And then they would even quarrel, oblivious of the divine who is seated inside. So one day the mother gave. She would have conversations, but this conversation was just this much. Like a concentrated dose of medicine. And she said, "I would like you to meditate on this today." What was the conversation? She titled it, "On the Harm Done by Incontinence of Speech." The harm done by incontinence of speech. You see, if I have the full passage, because I just chanced upon this. If it is, yes. Look at the words. "Very often I have told you that every word spoken uselessly is a dangerous chatter." Every word spoken uselessly. But here, the situation has reached the very limit. There are things which have been said over and over again, repeated by all those who have tried to perfect humanity, unfortunately without much result. It is a question of malicious gossip. When two people get together, A and B, the best, you know, what they enjoy most is talking about self. And almost invariably in ungenerous terms. Not realizing that when C and B meet, they will talk about A. And when A friends he will meet, they will talk about thee in the same ungenerous terms, because as it is said, Parninda Karras, you say, right? There are some people who say, we never take alcohol, and they feel very good about it. But they enjoy the alcoholic, heady wine of Parninda. It is a much worse thing. Alcohol is safer. This is much worse. Alcohol destroys only you. But this destroys not only you, your body, your soul. It destroys others also. Because it does that harm. Incontinence of speech. So she says, malicious gossip of slander, of the pleasure taken in speaking ill of others, the perverse kind of pleasure. The ego feels it becomes great because it speaks ill of others. It can go to absurd levels. One place Shrivinda says, people think that by talking about, you know, Swami Vivekananda was, let's say, prone to anger. See, they think that simply because they can speak about Swami Vivekananda's anger, they are half as great as him. So they take a pleasure. There are some people who always find that little thing. I was really surprised. There was a person who said, you know, I was on the verge of taking Ramana Maharshi as my master. So I asked him, why? I mean, what happened? So I thought maybe he'll say, you know, that I realize that my path is transformation and this does not fulfill my soul's quest. But what he said absolutely shook me out of my wits. He said, no, but then I saw that he is picking his nose. A man goes to see a yogi of that stature and ends up only seeing the nose. This is human nature. Hariman Shri Bachchan, Amitabh Bachchan's father, he went to Pondicherry. And what did he see? That mother had flu. So he concluded that, I don't know. She is divine, so she should not be having flu. But then very strangely, he makes a very interesting observation. He says, but somehow, maybe something was there because I got rid of my cold. Actually, he gave away the answer without, you know, realizing it. He didn't say that she took upon her the burden of people. He didn't read that beyond his comprehension. But, you know, he almost, his soul knew. Here was his soul which stepped out and told him something, but the mind mistranslated. It's a classic example of how a soul revelation can get clouded in the mind. He saw a truth, but the mind could not really receive it in the right way. Anyone who indulges in this kind of incontinence debases his consciousness. See the practice of indulgence. People ask, what should we do? And immediately they want to know how to meditate. How will we meditate if our mind is full of all this? The mind has to be first disabused. We can't meditate, you know, after drinking country liquor. Has to be out of the system. Poison, this poison does not allow us to meditate. We sit for meditate and, you know, the mind gets restless, turbulent. Why? Because these things are not worked upon. That's why Kabir says in a very nice couplet, Sadhu Sahaja Samadhi Pali. True meditation is that which is spontaneous. The mother says that. It's spontaneous. It's not dependent on anything external, because nature has become quiet. And it can meditate anywhere. Mother says, of course you can meditate even on the battlefield. This is true meditation. Undisturbed in the midst of noise, simply because inside it becomes quiet. So this practice helps us towards that. If we do this, meditation will be spontaneous. We don't have to teach meditation. If we have emptied our mind and heart of all this poison brought, then Amrit will show itself, because, you know, finding divine is actually like uncovering. That is, it's not finding in the sense that we have to do something, we have to undo something. So this undoing, debasing our consciousness, the hypnosis, he says something very, 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 very strong. And when to this incontinence is added the habit of vulgar quarreling, expressed in coarse language, then that amounts to suicide. Spiritual suicide within oneself. We talk about practice, lifetime of practice. Quarreling with coarse language, vulgar language. You want to be candidates of that great journey. Here we stand, Mother Ishvini, as a mirror. Here we stand, my child, first practice this small thing. Don't criticize. Don't get into quarrels. Don't start observing defects. Don't be vulgar in language, coarse in language. And then the divine will manifest. But if you do that, it's spiritual suicide. So what is the content of our speech? That's the other thing. It's very important. There are two sides, sound and the words. Sound is as important. And the word as the word. And another very good practice, simple practice, which the mother speaks and in times which we are going to witness, it's going to become more and more important, and that is truth speaking. I'm sure you both have emphasized on it. And they say truth speaking not only in speech but in writing. Of course, there are times when one is not conscious. One had thought it is like this and one has written or spoken. But there are times when one is conscious. And if you observe very carefully, between the thought and the word, something intervenes. Gently twists. I don't know how often we have observed it. Very gently. It is the devil at play. Devil, what does devil do? It picks up the scripture and gives a little twist to it. And it changes the sense in the mind of the hearer. It is called twisting. Mother says the action of falsehood is to twist truth. Not untruth in that sense, but it twists. And in that twisting, very often, half the tale, you know, somebody will come and say, you know, how my partner is horrible and everything. Now, as a psychiatrist, I've learned never to go by one-sided, you know. But there are people who are carried away by that. Oh, really? He or she is so bad, so horrible. They start giving sympathy and everything. If only they could once ask the other person, they may get such a different picture that they may be lost and confused as to what is the truth. It's not easy to know truth. And yet, whatever we know, we should speak truth. Satyam Vada Priyam Vada. And Mother says in the age that we are entering, only truth can save us. Truth in thought, in feelings, truth in speech, truth in action. It's a practice of lifetime. We talk about practice of integral yoga. Let's practice over the next 3 days. No, 3 hours. Let's speak only truth with minimum wastage of words. See how often we'll have to restrain ourselves. Almost I don't feel like speaking, and then something will say, no, no, we have thought of practicing 3 hours. Maybe half an hour. That would be fair enough. But we will speak only truth, only the necessary words. And we will see that how much energy we gain. Lot of diseases. Doctors don't speak about it. Actually, they don't know it's not their fault. And of course, they have to also, drug companies also have to, you know, they have children to, you know, grow up. So we should be kind and compassionate towards doctors and drug companies also. So if they give a simple formula that, you know, learn to reduce incontinence of speech and therefore gather energy for action, then what will happen to the whole vitamin pill industry? So we should have compassion. It's a simple practice. We can do it. We can do it tomorrow and see what happens. If you are suddenly feeling tired, sit quietly. Don't indulge in any conversation. Sit quietly. Gather the energies. Gather, gather, gather. As they say, like a tortoise that goes inside its shell. And one can call for peace, light, joy, strength. Within 20 minutes, 15 minutes, 10 minutes, up again. So this speech is an externalizing instrument. And we should be very careful because this can be uplifted. To what extent speech is creative? Shubhendu says it's a creative word. It can actually create things for us. Even thoughts can create. So very often when doctors prognosticate, doctors very often say, oh, I think he is, days are numbered. So best is to ask the doctor, can you yourself predict your own death? Then don't predict, please, anybody else's. Because speech is creative. It has a power to create circumstances. It can go inside our mind and plays like a gramophone record. We don't realize. I think some people have experienced it. What happens when somebody has told us something which is not good? Even good things. So there are neurons in the brain which are called mirror neurons. And then like a record they keep playing. So bolne wala to bolke chala gaya. But he has set the record going. So there were studies that when people go to a hospital and to a set of patients, they found that when people come and meet them just for 5 minutes and say nice things, the prognosis improves very much. Why does it improve in those 5 minutes? What have they done? Whatever they have said, some nice things, don't worry, you'll be fine, that keeps playing for another 90 minutes and puts the brain in a very positive state. So in the brain, there is a little gramophone, there's a little recording device, and unfortunately, it plays both negative as well as positive things. So speech is creative. This is a capacity of speech that sometimes we can help people simply by its power. When a physician was asked that, how come you do the same thing that we all do, but how is it that your patients improve much faster? So he had this one single advice. He says, I say something to my patient. Now, see, speech is not just verbal. We think what we say, but communication, a lot of communication is an invisible transaction of thoughts, of consciousness. Communication, all communication is an act of consciousness, and speech is only one instrument. Very often we say one thing, but inside there is another consciousness and it causes problems. So this doctor says, when I stand before a patient, all that I say inwardly is, I'll say in Hindi, then translate, but it has a flavor. He is Sachidanand Brahm, yaapne kya apne upar rog ka labada uda hua hai. O Supreme Divine, thou who art full of light and beauty and bliss, what kind of mask of illness are you wearing? And it helps, because deep inside the soul listens. And it shakes itself. It's like telling someone what. It's a prison in which you have trapped yourself. It's a creative power. And if we can really make this instrument perfect, it's a whole process of sadhana. All this by continence of speech, by right expression, by invoking the divine so that our speech can be full of peace and light. This can become so powerful that we have simply to say, so be it, and it. That's the power of the gods. At one place, Mother says, those who practice truth, whatever they say, that begins to happen. That turns out to be truth. Why? Because they have cultivated this power. It's a power which can do things because they have practiced truth. One single practice. So, what is it that we are communicating? Is it, are we communicating something true? Are we communicating something false? Something which will debase, something which will degrade? So this way this instrumental personality begins to improve. How we communicate, not just by words, my thoughts, feelings, not really with human beings. Communication is something which is the whole universe. And half the art of communication is paradoxically in the art of listening. So, very often, again as a counselor, people ask me, what do you do? So I tell them, more important is what I do not do. What you do not do, what people rush to do, what they rush to do to give advice. Don't give advices. Very often we don't know what is good for people, but listen to them. If they have spoken out, release their energies, they will get the light from inside. So commonly I have seen that after there is a catharsis, the light springs from inside. So listening is an art. We don't listen. Have you seen that before people have finished their sentences, the other person is rushing to speak? But we don't want to listen. So there is a total disruption of communication. And both are thinking that they know what is going on in the other person's mind. So art of listening is part of communication. Listening not only to human beings, listening to our own soul, listening to silence, listening to everything that is around. It speaks, the mother speaks about listening to the cherry blossom tree, listening to the vegetables, listening to the plants, to the flowers. And they speak. They want to tell us something. But we don't listen to them. So communication is a two-way process. Very often we just speak and that's it. We don't wait to listen to the person. We do the same thing with God. We have a list of prayers and we tell God, and after we have finished, we become restless and we come out. And God keeps calling and listen, but listen to me. What? No, 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 sir, I have to go to another God because I'm not sure you will listen to me or not. So I have, you know, Siddhi Vinayak and, you know, Durga Devi and Kali Mata and, you know, every possible temple. Some God will at least listen. We don't have time to really listen to what God is trying to tell us. This listening to this inner voice, this is also part of the communication. When we listen to it, we can help others listen to it. So subtle. So, then another important thing in communication is when to speak and where to speak. This is a very common, simple thing which you miss out on. When to speak. In the Gita, it is said that the tap of vani, you know, it's a whole tapasya of speech. And in the tapasya of speech, one of the things is you must know when and where. Time and space are so important considerations in anything. There is something which is has a great effect when spoken at the right time. When it is spoken at a wrong time, it is just the opposite effect. So when two people are quarreling, or one person is very angry, and the other person says that, you know, you're getting very angry, it's not good. Mother has said, don't get so angry, it's spiritual suicide. And the person says, oh, you are teaching me. I know. You better think about it yourself. So hey, what was the effect? It's counterproductive. Wait for a while. Don't let the divine come into our disputes. When things are quiet and we go and say, don't you think that we could express it in a better way? Don't you think that, you know, when we were fighting it was like animals? This is not what mother expects of us. Then the other person also listens. And we can probably just give a nice warm gesture. A sweet little embrace and then communicate so that there is a feeling of acceptance. So there is a time when we need to communicate. Where to communicate? In front of others, very often. I have seen grown-up people do this, treating their grown-up children as if they are little babies. Even babies don't like. They react sharply. Can't do that. They take it that it's infringing upon. And, you know, they have their own sensitivities. We have our own, they have their own. So we should be very careful where we are communicating. Now, interpretation may not be right. We all learn it. Like I read in a book of child upbringing that I thought I knew everything about bringing up a child till I had my own. So I went through a similar experience that I thought I've done my MD in psychiatry and I know all about child psychology. Till one day when my son had his own friend and I was very happy about it. And I spoke to my friend on phone, his friend, and he was there. And boy, and with me there was no problem when he would discuss it. And he suddenly felt very bad about it that I spoke. Why did I speak about this friend to a dear friend of mine whom he also knew? So I said, but you know so and so uncle. No, but why did you speak? Then I realized that, well, everyone has his own sensibilities. And it was a mistake. There are things which are not to be spoken just about anywhere. There is a place for something. And for everything there is a place. This is, in yogic parlance we use the word sattvikta. It's to know where to speak, when to speak, how to speak, what to speak, and why. Why am I speaking? Very often people speak to prove a point. Prove that I am one up. Nobody in this world has ever accepted another person's point of view. People unnecessarily blame women. Men are as stupid. It's just that poor women get branded. Has any man ever accepted that he is, because a woman is telling him that you may be wrong? No man accepts, I am wrong. He may say this more out of fun, but never in his heart he accepts. But as I said, women get blinded. All human beings, if we try to push a point, if we try to insist, prove a point by debate, discussions, arguments, it doesn't help. Nobody changes by that. Nobody has ever in this world changed by such advices. It's the most useless, fruitless effort that human beings are made into. In the morning, I think I shared this little anecdote earlier also. When someone asked mother, but I see these two people speaking in the ashram courtyard and I don't like it, should I tell them? Mother said that, well, if you tell them, it may help them, may. If you don't tell, it will help you. It will help you. It may help them. We live under this illusion that others are our subjects, who must listen to us, who must change because I am telling him things. But what happens, people get into a harder and harder shell. If you keep pointing out a mistake, people become more and more defiant. How dare you tell me? You think I'm wrong. And there is revolt, especially in adolescence. But if you keep pointing the beautiful side and don't touch upon the negative in everyone, don't keep insisting upon that. After a while, as the light grows, the darkness will recede. In yoga, this is the method we follow. In yoga, we don't keep struggling with our difficulties. Shurinda says it's a method. Yogic method of dealing with difficulties is don't struggle with the difficulties, but offer it to the light and keep calling the light and peace from above. After a while, the difficulties automatically recede because the inner being grows, and when it grows, automatically it has a power. All authentic changes from within out. Any change which is because of external pressure will break down at the first possible opportunity. So the whole trick is to grow in the inner being, to create this inner bond, to let the heart speak. Heart seldom speaks in today's time here because one, we don't develop it at all through the process of education. We stifle it. It's not good. Emotions are bad. And this alone, that to left side, as that joke is there, that we have two sides of the brain, left and the right, and the left has nothing right in it, and the right has nothing left in it. So we have stopped feeling, we have stopped communicating from the heart. So the result is disruption. And to now overcome that disruption, such complicated tools that sometimes you wonder, one wrong text, but to a wrong person, and it can create havoc. Whereas the heart can heal. It can heal many things. Provided we try to bring that authentic love once again into our life. So many things that we have to learn as a human race about everything, small thing like speech. So let this become an instrument as much sharing the divine perfection as anything else. It is an instrument given to us, spoken speech as well as written speech, to express the higher realms, higher sphere. But to do that, the activity of the Lord must be stilled. If we keep using this instrument to project lower nature, then it cannot become an instrument for the higher things. It must become quiet. We must deliberately stop ourselves, force ourselves whenever this instrument is being used to project vibrations which are not good. And then open this, offer this instrument to the light, to truth, to peace, to sweetness, to ananda, so that this can become an instrument of the divine perfection. And we close with a letter of Sri Aurobindo, and then we can have question and answers. It's one of the most beautiful letters, and for a long time I had put it just to practice it. It's from one of his letters. The psychic self-control that is desirable in the midst of discussion would mean, among other things, so his advice, number one, not to allow the impulse of speech to assert itself too much or say anything without reflection, but to speak always with a conscious control and what is necessary and helpful. So there are six things in this. First thing he's saying, not to assert too much. No, I'm right. I cannot be wrong. So sometimes it's good to reflect it back. I know you cannot be wrong. This simple thing helps. Instead of, you know, because it suddenly like a shock, because one is expecting a retaliation. No, you have to be right. How can you be wrong? So, you know, sometimes this itself, small thing helps. It helps to reflect. So nothing but to speak without reflection. Second, to avoid all debate, dispute, or too animated discussion, and simply say what has to be said and leave it there. If it has to work, it will work. Divine will use that to make the change. There should also be no insistence that you are right and the others wrong. Common problem. Universal disease. I have to be right. Why? Well, God knows why. For some mysterious reason, I am always right. Mysterious reason, because there is no reason to it. It's the most illogical absurdity in which we indulge. Only truth consciousness can be always right. All others have a margin of error. And it's a healthy thing to remember that whatever I may be thinking or speaking, there may be a margin of error in that. It's a very healthy corrective to the ego. At least some margin we should keep so that we can progress. Because if I am always right, then there is no scope left for progress. If the divine wants to change us, he will find a consciousness which says, I am right. Which means I don't need to change. But when we say, well, this is how I think, but maybe, then another truth may dawn upon us. And the mother says this is a very good method to really make the mind wide and supple. To set a thesis, to put an antithesis, and then to find a synthesis. And a time comes, at least in yoga, when one discovers that all that one says and finds as true, its opposite is also true. It is really, it's a very, very humbling experience that all that one says is true, its opposite is also true. Three. Now it continues. But what is said should only be thrown in as a contribution to the consideration of the truth of the matter. Three, to keep the tone of speech and the wording very quiet and calm and insistent. Because, as you have seen, that to two sides of speech, sound and word. And sound is even more important than word, because we react to sound rather than to the word. Word comes later. 4. Not to mind at all if others are heated and dispute, but remain quiet and undisturbed, and yourself speak only what can help things to be smooth again. When someone asks the mother, when people insult you, what should you do? Mother said, a true child of mine can never feel insulted. It's only the ego that feels insulted. It's the ego personality that feels insulted. So if others are insulting, yes, it may be painful. Step inside. Let that wave pass. Not to get caught up in that moment. Human opinions are opinions of ignorance. Nobody is living in truth. So if somebody says that you are useless, doesn't mean we are useless, and we start wearing sackcloths and start listening to medias and results. And he would think that I am ignorant, fine, no news. It's a known fact. If somebody thinks one is useless, one doesn't become useless. What matters is the divine's opinion of ours. Unfortunately, the divine has no opinions. He simply sees and does and loves. He does not even judge. He sees and does what needs to be done, and he loves. 5. If there is gossip, this is very difficult, but most necessary. If there is gossip about others and harsh criticism, especially about sadhaks, not to join. But these things are helpful in no way and only lower the consciousness from its higher level. So if there is things being spoken ill about others, not to join into it. And finally, to avoid, what a simple thing Sri Guru is telling us, to avoid all that would hurt. This is an instrument to bridge, not to break the bridges. All that would hurt. How much we hurt and wound through speech. Sometimes one feels that a physical slap is much less harmful. Its effect lasts only for a few minutes. But the effect of words, harsh words, continues to. It's like an arrow that pierces and bleeds inside. So there is so many things simply about just one thing of our life, and that is speech. And if you can practice it, as I said, to talk as little as possible, to conserve energy, then how much your life will change. Just one little practice. I'll rest my speech for the moment. But not for any questions. If there are questions, we can have, or any observations. Most welcome.
So I have a question.
Yes.
Here.
Yes.
Usually, in our saying, it says that truth is bitter. When you say something, it doesn't sound good. So always ego comes in a place and messes up. So how do you deliver the truth? Because your conscience has a truth. Is a different definition than the others. So it's a fine line. How would you handle that?
There is a sweet truth and there is a bitter truth. Let me first, you know, put that in perspective. The bitter truth is about the dark or difficult side of our nature, which we don't want to see. And the sweet truth is about the beautiful side of our nature. All of us contain both. Now, there is a way to communicate things about the dark side of nature, if at all we have to. In a certain situation, we may need to. Let's say to a child or someone, we're living together, some things we need to, you know, make clear. So it can be communicated in a way which in our Indian thought is said, satyam vadam, priyam vadam. Clothe it in a pleasant way. There's a very nice little story of Kalidas. When he asked two of his disciples to complete a the street is an yas. There is a tree standing in front. You say what you are seeing. So one of them said, Shushka Vriksha Tishtati Agri. Correct? Shushka Vriksha Tishtati Agri. The other says, Nira Sataru Arvila Sati Purata. That's right. So sometimes it's an art. Instead of saying, you know, this is so bad in you, this is horrible, you smell horribly. Or to put it, give it to you as gift. No, these are crude ways. Simply say, see, it's really such a wonderful person. If only you know, just this little bit and your whole personality will be so wonderful. So first, 8 positives, then 2 negative things people can take. So first we should put the larger picture. In the larger picture, everybody is beautiful. Because everybody, I believe it, that even a criminal, hardcore criminal, in the larger picture, if you see the totality, he has many nice things about him. There are very few. Always some people have. Even the hardcore, cruelest person, you know, has something which is beautiful. There are some odd exceptions. We are not talking about Hitler and, you know, but in our average life. It's always good to first give that large and beautiful picture. So, for instance, if I have to communicate someone who is prone to anger, so how I would do it? I'm just sharing with you. I would probably write a little card and keep it in a visible place that, you know, you are such a wonderful person. And, you know, you have such a capacity to make things beautiful. Don't you think that if you could just work a little bit on your anger, it would help so much more? Because I'm sure you do want to create harmony. And just keep it. I'll not speak about it. So when the person gets up in the morning, the anger is gone and sees it, and of course with nice words, thank you, and nice pleasantries, it may have an effect. But if you say, what is it, you know, full of anger, spoiled my life, destroyed your own life, it doesn't help. We're here to help each other, not to harm and hurt each other. So there is a time to communicate things. Very often parents do that even with children. You know, they write a little card, put it below the pillow, these are very nice gestures. Sometimes verbal communication, when a person is very angry, you can be overtaken by compassion, you know. One of the things that Raj Yoga teaches us, that we can give a completely opposite response to a situation. Try it sometime. I've tried it. It's very interesting. When a person is angry, if you know, he's pulling us to the surface, and we begin to, after a while, vibrate with that anger. Now, the mother has said that people who get angry have a very weak vital. It's a sign of a very weak vital. And if you vibrate with the same intensity, you also have a weak vital. He says that. So instead of taking that response, just once go within and start looking at the person. Then one begins to feel pity. But pity is not a good emotion. It has something nice about it, but not a good emotion. The next, compassion. You feel real is a soul struggling, trapped. And then maybe you don't have to speak anything, just go near and just this gesture. Take the person to the heart. Because he needs healing. It's sickness. If somebody has influenza, you don't get angry. You give a nice medicine and make some nice kadha to drink. So the person who is angry needs medicine. And the medicine that heals is love. He says if you give love in response to anger, it can heal. It's difficult, but we are here, unfortunately or fortunately, to do difficult things. Yoga is not easy. Raj Yoga teaches us this. And mother has said this is a very good way to substitute the positive emotion in place of the negative one. This is part of the Raj Yoga training. Any last question? Everybody is practicing silence. Shanti Madhyama Vaikri. So, can you explain a little bit about Madhyama? Madhyama is actually referring more to the subtle domains of speech, which is thoughts, which are shaping themselves as speech, because speech and word actually walk. Word is not the external manifestation, but the vibration. So thoughts and speech, whether written or spoken, is simply a vehicle. And that vehicle is clothing certain vibrations. So Madhyama is referring to the thoughts which belong to the subtle domain. And those things human consciousness can experience and project. Whereas Vakri is this most external speech. So this is the difference. And Ashanti belongs to the domain of intuitive intelligence. People who can see things and express that. And Para, of course, is the supreme word, supreme vibration. So Vak, or the word in the Indian thought or in spiritual literature, refers actually to the supreme vibration, the first stir in the supreme consciousness. So when it is said that word become flesh, it means that. And thought is a mediating instrument between that which is beyond thought and this which is expressed here. So thought is meant to be, as Shubhendra says in one of his poems, the paraclete. It's like a bird which goes reconnaissance and brings that down to earth. So by the power of thought and imagination, Madhyama, we can connect the external consciousness with the internal and the higher. So that is the function of thought. But since nobody teaches us how to think, how to feel, how to love, all this instrument has been given to the asana unwittingly and used for darkness and division in this world, not for unity and integration.
This mantra we have, you know, if it is not pronounced right, you know, it doesn't have the effect. So is there any way, you know, it is how to pronounce it in the mantra, say?
Yes, the Puritans believe it. But there are also in literature stories which are just the opposite. For instance, in Indian thought it is said about Valmiki, Ulta Naam Japa Jag Jana Valmiki Bhai Brahma Samana. He could not say Ram. He could only say Mara. The US story say Mara. Mara, 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 Mara. So the moral of the story is that the state of consciousness is far more important than the external technique. So it is also true that with regard to the mantra, one way is that you learn from a guru and by tradition passes the right intonation. The problem of too much of technique and over-systematization is that sometimes we lose the spirit because we are all the time struggling that I must have the right intonation. So that cry is lost. Whereas if we capture the cry, then automatically the intonation comes because the state of consciousness which preceded the mantra has been captured. I have seen this with Savitri and many of Shrivindra's poems, that if you put yourself in the right state of consciousness, and that's what Mother recommends, then spontaneously the rhythm comes. Now this rhythm is not fixed and unalterable. The moment we try to make anything fixed and unalterable, then the next step is we'll make it rigid. And we'll create a total illusion out of it. But God loves to play with freedom and flexibility, even while He keeps the purity and the sanctity. So both things are important. It's, you know, obviously, it has its great power, the right utterance of the mantra. But the state of consciousness is far more important. And if that is there, then one single, you know, Christ, Hare Krishna, can work wonders. But when it's not there, every day we say all the prayers and no God comes. Probably it doesn't reach them also. Or they just say that this fellow is another sermonizer. So the state of consciousness is much more important. And sometimes too much emphasis on the external technique becomes counterproductive. And Shubhendu speaks about it in the synthesis in the very first chapter. Because then we are too much anxious to get the thing right and lose the state, which is more important. Because ultimately the divine sees the heart of the seeker much more than the word that is spoken. And then, just to sum it up, the last one. Again, I'm reminded of Kabir. Jo bolu, so ved kahava. Jahan pag dharu sukhi rat. Kabir is saying, what I speak is an utterance of the Veda. Why? Because I'm in a state of consciousness where knowledge is revealing to me, just as it did to the ancient seers. So when a person is in that state of consciousness, whatever he says or she says is a Veda Vakya. So that should be our aspiration and effort to arrive at that state of consciousness.